Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Animal Academy podcast. While sharing my life with animals, I depended on the support of the veterinary professionals who have been there for emergencies, routine visits, to provide education, to help me make difficult medical decisions regarding my pet's care, and have worked tirelessly to help take care of their needs. I was shocked to learn how high the incidence of depression, anxiety, and suicide are among veterinary professionals, and immediately thought of what an awesome profession that is to do something you love and work with animals all day. While yes, that's what led these professionals into the field, there are many other factors that make everyday work in the field so challenging. Today, I will be speaking with Dr. Carrie Journey, who besides working as a veterinarian for over 20 years, is board certified in neurology and is the president of NAMVI, Not One More Vet, one of the largest charities in the world that focuses on veterinary well-being. Welcome to the Animal Academy podcast. I'm Allison White, and I'm a licensed clinical social worker who specializes in the human-animal connection. This podcast will showcase professionals who share their areas of expertise in an ongoing series of interviews, and you are there. Their input, stories, and knowledge will help us all understand that we are the ones that actually end up learning from the animals. This is the Animal Academy Podcast. Hello, Dr. Journey, and welcome to the show.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
So before we discuss some of the work you're doing in the field, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and what made you choose to be a veterinarian?
Yeah, absolutely. As stated, I'm a veterinarian. I'm a veterinary neurologist, in fact. And I think I came to the path of veterinary medicine a little from the side, right? A lot of people know they want to be veterinarians from the time they're born. I knew that I wanted to be a doctor. I've always been a science nerd. And in fact, when I was picking colleges, I specifically picked one with a neuroscience program, not realizing that my career path would eventually lead me to be a veterinary neurologist. I worked in human medicine for a short time. In college, I was actually working at a physician's office. Ironically enough, it was some of the stresses of working in medicine that made me decide that I wanted to pick maybe a different medical field. Silly me. I didn't realize that those stresses are very similar, whether you're working on people or pets. But I'm not sad that I made the change. I love my career, truly.
So did you always have animals growing up?
I did. You know, we were a very pet-filled household. I've always had a dog that I can remember. I've always had cats that I can remember. And my mom was fairly permissive with other stuff. I had ferrets, I had iguanas and frogs and things like that. I was not allowed to have rodents or snakes. Those were the only rules. But everything else was kind of welcome in the household. So
great. So I was looking over some of the things that you've done in the past. And over the years, you've had so many different roles in the veterinary practice. I'm sure that has helped you gain various perspectives. Would you like to share anything about your experiences and what you've learned?
Sure. I mean, I have worked in most roles from kennel to reception, and I'm now a practice owner and specialist. So I've done them all. I wasn't a licensed RVT. I guess that's the only one that I did not do, but I did function as a very medically oriented assistant at a practice. So, you know, I think that perspective has helped me a good deal. I mean, I will tell you that I'm the worst veterinary receptionist probably on the planet, and I have infinite respect for the people who can do that job well, because it's a super tough job. I don't think there's an easy job in a veterinary hospital, but I think they all have, you know, their necessary place, and we all need to work together. And so it's helped me in managing and working in practices to really like know and respect the challenges that come with each role.
Well, and you had mentioned veterinary receptionist, and I've certainly witnessed being in the waiting room for many, many hours during an emergency and having to watch the receptionist, having to navigate through all the challenging conversations from, I can't get you in, we're completely busy, to, you know, a variety of different things, or giving them what their total cost is for the procedure, and then having to like be kind of the punching bag for some of those conversations. Very difficult.
There is nothing that makes me more angry as a doctor or practice owner when you smile at my face and then yell at my staff. Unfortunately, they are there when the hammer drops of how expensive medicine is. And you know, my receptionist friends have told me how many times people have thrown credit cards at them and it's really exhausting to see. And I have so much respect for them. They really are the absolute front line of a veterinary hospital.
Mm-hmm. When I've talked to different staff, and they said that the number one thing, especially during COVID, is not being able to see all the clients in person. And then the receptionist has to try to, I keep using the word navigate. That's the only thing I can think of right now, is triage and also be the punching bag again. So
yeah. Being a non-bee and you know, getting a perspective for veterinarians across the planet has shown me how lucky I am. I live in the San Francisco Bay Area, where, you know, people are pretty on board with COVID restrictions. And so most of our clients, I'd say 99% of them, are permissive. I will say that certainly nobody loves curbside. I can't say that. Some people do, but I don't. I, as a veterinarian, you know, as a specialist, I give pretty bad news. I give pretty hard news. We have a lot of really tough conversations we have to have. And, you know, what is it? 95% of communication is nonverbal, and conveying empathy, reading your client, you know, those are skills I've worked pretty hard on in my career, and they're harder to do on the phone. It's more exhausting to communicate that way. So I will tell you, as soon as I got vaccinated, I started walking myself out of the parking lot just for my own sanity. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I needed to talk to my clients face-to-face again, but we still can't let them in the hospital, which provides for tricky moments. Some of the toughest moments I've had in my career have been in the last year.
Well, and I see my dog's veterinarian walking across the parking lot in icy weather, snow, and all kinds of things to deliver those messages. And, you know, you've got a difficult job as it is, and then to add in the elements and having to have conversations in the parking lot has been a challenge, I know.
Yeah, it definitely has, especially around subjects like euthanasia. I cannot tell you, that has probably been the most difficult thing this year. I think all people who work in this profession are understandably and rightfully very picky about this set and setting and the way that euthanasias are performed. We realize it's such an important and sacred part of our job. And to have that need to change for the safety of our staff has been really heartbreaking, really, mm-hmm. really hard. So. Mm-hmm.
I do a lot of pet loss and bereavement counseling in my private practice. And that has been the number one thing, is when they've had to say goodbye to one of their animals and not all the family members have been allowed to come in.
Yeah, absolutely. It's changed the way I practice. I'll tell you, I invented all sorts of new systems this year, but out of necessity. And one of them was, you know, a different way of sedating animals for euthanasia so they could sit with their family for a little while, mm-hmm. in the parking lot and until they were fully asleep, mm-hmm. and then bringing them in afterwards, just because I couldn't bear to separate them, you know? And so it's been a challenge for sure.
Well, there's a growing concern and awareness of the mental health needs within the veterinary profession. How has this changed over the years? And was this even addressed when you were in veterinary school?
I will say it definitely has changed, especially in the last 5 years. I will say I had the benefit of a very forward-thinking veterinary surgeon at my school at the University of Georgia. Dr. Karen Cornell is really a pioneer in the field of teaching soft skills to veterinarians. You know, back in the day, I, you know, went to school far too long ago, God. And it was almost 20 years ago at this point. Back then, we just called it communications classes or practice management classes. But, you know, there was a lot of talk about, I'm one of the only veterinarians that I know in my generation who actually had a class on euthanasia and talking to clients about euthanasia. I was so shocked that that wasn't taught, because, you know, I teach a lot of, you know, vet students, and we talk about complicated brain and spinal cord things, many of which they'll never see or never do. Every veterinarian in practice is going to navigate euthanasia at some point. And the fact that it isn't taught is just an oversight. So I made sure when I was at Penn that we taught a class on it. I taught it with our veterinary social worker, actually, Christine. Oh. I taught it. In the last 5 years, I think we really have started to talk about wellness and not dance around it. You know, the fact that it was a communications class 20 years ago, it's a wellness class now. It's given more importance, right? Like, other things are getting bumped from the curriculum to make room for it. Because I think we've realized that, you know, this isn't a new problem in veterinary medicine. There's literature spanning back to the 60s that show elevated rates of mental health problems and suicide. But it is a problem that we're now going to address, which I could not be happier. You know, this is something that needs attention and focus.
It really does. And I was looking at some of the statistics that we're going to put in the show notes so other people can see them. You know, what are some of the factors that people may not be aware of that make working in this profession so hard?
I mean, I think that everybody can access the fact that it's an emotionally challenging job. There's a tremendous amount of emotional labor that goes into being a veterinarian. And with that comes what's called secondary trauma. So every day I give really hard news I tell someone that their best friend is probably not going to make it. And I sit there and talk to them about the stories of how much this animal meant to them and how much this is going to hurt. That's not my trauma, right? It's not my pain, but I do experience it with them. I think most veterinarians are pretty empathic. And so we have to learn how to process that. And then 5 minutes later, you need to bounce into your next appointment. And maybe that's like a happy new puppy appointment, right? And so that's a lot of emotional whiplash that you go through. And I think most people can understand that. I think what a lot of clients can't really probably access without hearing about it is how much moral distress veterinarians go through. So moral distress is it's a terrible feeling. It's when you feel like circumstances are preventing you from doing what you think is right. And so for instance, you know, I've trained my whole life to be a doctor, to do medicine, to do everything I can to save the patient in front of me. But if a client can't afford that care, I can't do it for free. And so I'm prevented from doing something I want to do. They want to do it too. Everybody wants to do it, but this external circumstance is preventing us. And it causes a lot of conflict. It causes a lot of hurt feelings. And there's a lot of different scenarios that come up around that. People have different philosophies of how they treat pets. For instance, in my area, a lot of people want to treat their pets holistically. And I'm a very Western-oriented doctor. So, you know, you can see those push-pulls of disagreements can weigh on you. And unless you've got pretty firm boundaries and have really thought about what you're comfortable with, like you can get yourself into some sticky situations. The well-being problems in veterinary medicine are not just one thing. There are a lot of things. We have tremendous student debt. We are financially starved as an industry. We can't afford to pay our staff enough to keep them. We can't afford to pay our student loans. And so we get into kind of a vicious cycle, one that I hope we can break. And I think we will. I'm going to be optimistic.
Well, and the costs are high for you too. I mean, you can't absorb it. And I know that that was one of the sources of conflict between something I witnessed in the waiting room is somebody's dog needed surgery. And that's very, very expensive. Cruciate surgery, you know, several thousand dollars.
$1,000. Yeah. And I'm a neurologist. So I do, you know, spine and brain surgery. So mm-hmm. I'm very regularly talking about bills that are $8,000 and $10,000. That is a tremendous amount of money. That is a not feasible amount of money for a lot of people. And I get that. I absolutely do. But it doesn't make my costs any less. It doesn't fix the problem. So I'm all about very practical solutions on how do we fix this. And so I'm a big fan of pet insurance. So that's one of my solutions for it is I think in this country, healthcare is something that is basically a cash business. We could debate if that's the right or wrong thing for it to be, but that's the reality of what it is, right? And so we fix that for people with health insurance. And pet insurance is actually far more reliable in my experience than human health insurance. So I recommend that pretty widely because I do think those practical solutions will have an effect on veterinary mental health, right? Like if I'm able to do the medicine that I want to do, if you're happy with me because I'm able to tell you what's actually wrong with your pet because we can do the test, everybody's happier, right? Like everybody's happier. Those are the kind of things that I like to focus on.
Well, I remember telling my dog's veterinary specialist when I had to take him in for a pretty complicated diagnosis, I wish I had you as my medical doctor. Not having to worry about insurance. I mean, I know that's a whole other conversation, but also just getting to the heart of what are the issues and how do we treat it without having to worry about the diagnostic categories and payment and things like that would be so much easier.
We always say that, I mean, anyone who works in the field says that they would rather have a veterinarian, which I don't think is entirely fair to our MD colleagues. But, you know, I think there is a practicality in veterinary medicine that I really appreciate. Our liability is a lot lower than our MD and RN. Mm-hmm. And so we don't do a lot of CYA medicine. You know, we don't do test because somebody has to pay for those tests. So you kind of have to prioritize. So I think there is, you know, there are always some silver linings. And I agree. I mean, I certainly have been in the hospital. I get bit by cats a lot. I'm not fast enough, apparently. And I was getting an IV put in to get antibiotics and they couldn't hit my vein. They had five people try. And I thought, Lord, please just get my RBT in here. She can hit the vein on a seasoned kitten. Like she can definitely hit my vein. So I've definitely been there. Definitely.
Well, and I've had wonderful doctors. So I just want to put that in there too, is that nothing against my doctors. It's really a systematic kind of change. But so what made you decide to become so active with mental health education?
I don't think I had been really thoughtful about my own mental health, you know, in my early years as a veterinarian. And I certainly, as I entered into the field after my residency, really started to struggle a good deal. I burned out of my first job in 2 years. It's very common, actually, in veterinarians to leave your first job within the first 3 years. it's just a big learning curve. And it's really easy to point that stress externally and say, it's just this job. It's usually not the job. It's usually you. I'm sorry to say, my veterinary friends, but there can be job factors, but it is often more important that you look inward. But anyway, I didn't. And so then I went and started a practice with some friends, figuring if I had more control as a control freak perfectionist, then of course things would be better. That was not true. I worked 7 days a week for 2 years, no vacations. I was fully burned out, but I still was not taking care of myself until one of my friends, actually, we were in surgery together. She was our surgeon and she called me in just a random Thursday afternoon. And like, I'm a neurosurgeon. I know how to do surgery, but not the surgery she was doing. So that dog was doing very, very poorly. So we were working as fast as we could to save that dog. And I will never forget in my entire life how her hands just stopped. She looked at me over her surgical mask and she said, "Carrie, if this dog dies, I'm quitting my job. I'm going home and I'm going to kill myself." And I did not know what to do. I didn't know what to do. I had just leafed past every compassion fatigue article in every magazine I'd ever read. I had no training, but I did my best. You know, it turns out like a little focus and good intention goes a long way in those conversations. And I'm very, very glad to say that my friend is doing a lot better now. But, you know, I was actually already part of the NAMVI forum at that point. But that moment really was kind of the spark that said to me, like, this is not just something you've leafed past in a magazine. This is happening in your life. It's happening in your friend's life. And like, I'm a problem solver. So this was a problem and became a new problem. And it's one that I'm a big nerd. I like to read scientific articles and things. So I started to really like dig in and start to read all of the literature on veterinary wellness and wellness in general. And so it's been a weird ride, but I'm very gratified to see how far we've come in the last 5 years. I really am.
Well, and you mentioned NAMVI, which is Not One More Vet. Could you tell us a little bit about what that is?
Sure. So NAMVI started very innocently in 2014. We had just lost a very prominent veterinarian, Dr. Sophia Yin, to suicide. And our founder, Dr. Nicole MacArthur, she had been texted by one of her non-veterinary friends. That friend texted Nicole and another vet and just like, "I'm reading this stuff in a paper about veterinarians having elevated suicide risk. And like, are you guys okay?" Nicole and that other veterinarian just started to talk very honestly about how hard the job is, how often you get yelled at, how often you feel like a failure, how mistakes aren't tolerated. And Nicole said that conversation was the very first time in her entire career. And Nicole is a second generation veterinarian married to a veterinarian. But that conversation, where she was well over a decade into her career, was the first time that she didn't feel like a failure as a veterinarian, that she didn't feel like she was dumb or stupid or anything like that, that she was just a vet struggling with the same stuff everybody was. And she just wanted to keep that going. So she just went on Facebook and made a Facebook group and invited her vet school classmates just to like talk about it, right? I was invited by one of my resident mates on the second day, and now we have over 30,000 veterinary professionals. We have a veterinarian from every continent in the world in NAMVI, and over 20% of American veterinarians are in NAMVI. So it is a very big and active group. And then in 2017, we became a charity because we realized as the people running the group that sometimes people need a different kind of help than just talking about it. Like sometimes they need money, sometimes they need resources. So we became a charity so we could fundraise, and our grants program, I would tell you that our grants program, I would tell you the budget for it, but we've already blown through the budget this year. So, you know, we've already given out, I think, over $60,000 in grants just in this first part of 2021. So it is a very robust program that does very tangible good out in the world. And we're very, very proud of it. And NAMVI has grown tremendously. So we are now a very large and functioning charity. And I'm pretty sure we're the largest well-being focused charity for veterinary medicine in the world.
So what are some of the services that you provide?
We have services like the grants that I just talked about. We have an education committee where we give educational lectures about all of that nerdy stuff that I like to read about taking care of yourself, about kind of the underlying problems so we can all know about them and address them. We have a research division where we partner with people like the University of Tennessee, with Dr. Strand and her team, with Dr. Tracy Whitty, so we can understand more about what's happening. We have a new peer support program called Lifeboat, which will be a anonymous peer-to-peer support platform off of Facebook. Not every problem really needs to be on social media, right? Like nothing on social media is private. And so we're trying to create a space where we can have some conversations that we know need to be had in a space that feels a little bit more safe. Gosh, I'm definitely forgetting one of our programs too. Gosh, this always happens. So research, education, grants, and your support? Nope, I think that's all of them. So yeah, I mean, it's a, like I said, it's a growing organization. And so we always have a new program around the bend. So impactful and so amazing. And I'm really proud of the work we do.
Well, it's very exciting. Now, can anybody get on your NAMV website or Facebook group?
So the forums are restricted to veterinary professionals. This is a strict peer-to-peer support platform. So when you ask to join, you can ask to join off NAMV.org. We have a vet student group, we have a veterinarian group, and we have a support staff group. We will verify that you are who you say you are, either by license or diploma, or for the support staff, is your picture on the practice website? Can you show us your work badge? You know, we get a little creative, but we want to make sure that you are one of our peers because it is a peer-to-peer place. We wanted to create a space where really peers could talk to peers. As long as you work in the profession, you are most welcome in the forums.
That's good to know. And we'll put that information, contact information in the show notes as well. So I know that you've done extensive training and certification in compassion fatigue, and it really is a thing. You know, a lot of people don't know what it is until, you know, I will meet with them for therapy appointments and they're like, oh, that's compassion fatigue. And I said, yes, that really is. And there is a way to work through that. So can you tell me a little bit about the information that you learned during this training and how that may be helpful to others?
Gosh, I mean, I've had, like you said, I like to learn things. So I've had a lot of training. So I don't know if I can summarize them all right now, but
that's okay. That's all right.
The most important and impactful things I've learned is the importance of diversity of self. So many people enter this career and being a veterinarian, being a veterinary technician is all they ever wanted to be, right? It is a calling. It is a passion, but there is always another sick animal and it can eat your life very quickly. And what I like to say is, you know, when veterinary medicine kicks you in the teeth, you need to have some other part of your life to fall back on. And that means family, that means friends, that means hobbies. It needs to mean something. And you don't need to be trying to invent that when you're already burned out and fatigued, right? So you need to actually make real and actual time in your schedule to do those things. You need to have hobbies. You need to have family. You need to have friends. You need to make that happen. And it needs to be a priority just as much as getting up and going to work is. And then I think, you know, I've done a lot of work on myself. Certainly some parts of the literature that are a little hard to read or talk about how important your personality type and how you personally deal with stress is. You know, we chose, anyone in this field chose to enter a very stressful profession. Nobody made you become a veterinarian and it's stressful. And so you need to learn how to deal with that. A lot of people who go into medicine are perfectionist. We're a bit neurotic. And we need to learn to deal with ourselves. You know, my brain is an Olympic athlete at catastrophizing. I can think of what's going to go wrong in any situation. And it's really helpful in medicine, actually. Like thinking about what might happen that's wrong and planning around that is a super helpful skill. However, I don't need to see the negative in everything in my life. So like, for instance, working on the negative parts of my brain, really, I do a lot of gratitude and optimism training. Like that stuff is important to me. And it's let me surf above the stress in my job a little bit better. And then we need to talk about the importance of actually taking breaks because veterinarians don't take breaks. We've done studies in NAMV that show that 75% of veterinary professionals do not regularly even take a lunch break. We asked one day in NAMV, how many days on average in a week do you have where you do zero things for work? What do you think the most common answer was?
Zero. Yeah.
0 days when you don't think about work.
Yeah.
Where you're not texting with a client, where you're not, when you're not doing something for the office, writing records, something like that. And that's not okay. You know, to be the best doctor, the best practice owner, you know, like my job demands a lot of me. And that means I have to let me have some time as well. And so, but it's hard to do, right? Like it's easy to say draw boundaries, but when the boundary you have to draw means that some animal's not going to get the care that it needs from you right now, you know, you hope that it finds it somewhere else, but you know, gosh, that's grating against some pretty hard values. So.
Well, and when I talk to people in the rescue, animal rescue group, they feel the same way. Anybody that works with another human being, another animal feels there's one more living being to take care of. And it's really hard to set that limit for yourself.
It was important for me to realize that the way that I was practicing before, where I could not say the word no, it was the dirtiest word in the English language, I wasn't going to be able to continue to practice. I maybe can do this for another 3 or 4 years, and then I won't be able to do it anymore. And then I kind of did some math. You know, this is how my brain works. I said, well, those cases you see on the weekends, like if you don't do those, maybe you can actually practice for 15 or 20 years. And then how many more dogs are you actually going to save? And that's the math it took to convince me that like the answer is no. And it's not because I don't care about that dog. I care deeply about that patient, probably more honestly than is healthy, but I have to think about all the other patients that I have to pay attention to. And I have to, for the good of everyone, make sure that I'm taking care of myself.
Well, what you're talking about is focusing on the negative, which is helpful, you know, problem solving in the future, but we've got such a negative bias as human beings to protect us and to look out for all the possible things that could go wrong. But I was reading an article by Dr. Rick Hansen, and it's called Taking in the Good. And he talks about the importance of focusing on a lot of the positives to retrain your brain to have some balance. So you have to, because we already know we have a negative bias, it's always to, you know, we're always looking at that to ward off any kind of potential danger and to focus and capture any positives that you have during the day, those seeing the puppies, those things that you're able to work through and let it soak in.
Yeah. The three good things exercise. I will tell you, I live in hippy dippy San Francisco, right? And I'm not woo minded in general. So the first time one of my friends told me about gratitude exercise, I was like, no, back off. Like, absolutely not. I'm not into that. Like, I then, of course, nerd read the literature about gratitude exercises and saw the impact that had been proven about the three good things exercise increasing problem solving and happiness. And I started doing it probably 3 years ago. I do it twice a week. It is a noticeable and measurable impact on my life.
Really?
It is really? Absolutely. When a bad thing happens, I don't wallow anymore. And I am a champion wallower. And it's amazing. It seems so simple and so silly, but gosh, it works. Mm-hmm. It super works. Mm-hmm. Like, but you have to do it, right? Like, it's not like you do it once and then that's it, right? Like, it's like working out. Like, if you stop doing it, stops working. So I make sure that we do it. We do it in Nambi. It's called Thankful Thursday.
Good.
So we just did Thankful Thursday this morning. And then I have my friend who suggested it to me on her Facebook actually post Gratitude Fridays. So I make sure that
wonderful.
I'm there. So you can use social media for good. So I do my gratitude exercises online. So
yeah, that's awesome. And then to focus on the things that you can control that are within your power of control.
I agree. Yeah, absolutely. I think that mind shift of realizing that I am in control, that things are my choice, and that there are things I can control and that I cannot. So I'm in control of myself, and that's about it. Mm-hmm. and then everything else, I'm going to state my piece. And if something else happens, I did my best. You know, that mindset, I'll tell you, for a neurotic perfectionist, that's a hard one to get to. But you can get there. Years of therapy, just it can happen for you. So.
It can happen. I do have a past experience with one of my golden retrievers, Charity, who had a seizure in my house. This was many years ago, and took her into the specialty group. And they were like amazing, absolutely amazing. They did an MRI and she had benign meningiomas. Took her to the university, had surgery to remove three of them. And she was unfortunately the 10% that had pneumonia after the surgery. And it was one veterinarian that happened to be checking on her and got physically into where she was that heard a little bit of a raspiness in her lungs and said, and it was pneumonia. They treated it. Anyway, she had a long road of healing, but it was just that one time, and that could have been overlooked because you don't spend time with all of these animals all the time.
You usually do exams once or twice a day, you know, if they're very sick, sometimes four times a day. But yeah, I mean, this is where, once again, veterinary medicine is a team sport. We depend a lot on our RVTs who are taking care of them to tell us if things are wrong too. So yeah. But
tremendous gratitude for everybody that worked with her.
Absolutely.
You also completed the Veterinary Human Support Certificate Program at the University of Tennessee. And I completed the Veterinary Social Work Program and learned so much by having the veterinary professionals as part of this program and that intensive. Yeah.
I will say I haven't completed it yet. I'm not quite done.
Okay. All right.
But I am excited to be in the inaugural class for that program. I am honored to be in the inaugural class for that program. I think so many of the certificates out there that veterinary professionals take to try to educate themselves are a little thin. and this one is robust, right? And I will say, like, I thought, you know, I usually chew through these programs in a week or two. And I was like, oh no, I can't do this one in a week or two. So, it's been great. And I have a really great friendship and collaboration with Dr. Strand, who's the director of veterinary social work. And I think she is an angel walking the earth, and my life is only enhanced by having her as a partner and friend. So
actually listen to your live Facebook program interview with Dr. Strand, and there was a therapist that was on there too, the three of you.
Yeah, that's Chris. That's Chris, who is a board member at NAMVI. He is a I think he's a marriage and family therapist, but he runs a crisis intervention service for Northern California. So he is a great asset to the non-BE community. Absolutely.
Wonderful. Well, I enjoyed that interview. So is there anything else you'd like to share?
I mean, I guess, you know, I would love to say to all of your listeners, you know, be they, you know, pet parents or veterinary professionals, this has been a hard year. And it's okay to not be okay when stuff is hard. But we're getting through it, and we will get through it. And a little bit of kindness goes a long way right now.
It has been a really difficult year for everybody, but we're pulling together, I think, as a community in ways that we have not done before.
There is always silver linings, right? Like mm-hmm. I said, I figured out all new systems. I figured out telemedicine this year. There's all sorts of stuff that will come out that's good from the pandemic. But I also live in reality and know that this has been a tough year. And I think it's okay to say that you're struggling a little bit. And I think mm-hmm. that's when taking a commitment to taking care of yourself is important. I think people who work in helping professions, they tend to think that working harder is the way to solve feeling bad. And that doesn't always work out for you.
Right.
So I would encourage everyone to put some of that focus and drive into a little self-care, you know, taking a little time off. Even if you can't really go anywhere, you know, figure out how to take a staycation or something and, you know, do whatever has made you happy in the past. Even if you don't feel like doing it, just give it a try. And really put some effort there. It's worth it.
And work doesn't have to be your entire life. There are 8 dimensions of wellness, according to some of the trainings that I've been to. And you have to focus on the balance of all of them.
Exactly that. You will be a better doctor. You will be a better RBT if you are present, if your head is in the game and you're not burned out. It is worth it. Even if you have to convince yourself that it is for your patients. If that's how we have to get you there, that's how we'll get you there. Mm-hmm. You will be a better doctor if you are rested, happy, and present. So take care of yourself.
Well, Dr. Journey, is there a way to either reach you or NAMVI, or if anybody has any other questions, what are some
of the... Yeah, so they can reach out via our website at nomv.org. I am happy to answer questions, but I'll tell you, I don't always know the answers. I have an amazing team that helps me out. So okay. I would encourage you to reach out via the website. We're happy to talk about our programs. We're happy to partner. We're happy to connect people with resources. If you need, for instance, a grant, the grant application is online, and you know we're here to help.
Wonderful. Well, I want to thank you for everything that you do and for speaking with me today. I know how busy you are, and thanks for all the continued work that you do in the field. I appreciate it.
Pleasure. Well, thanks for having me on today.
Thanks. Today, I had the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Carrie Journey, who shared her personal experiences and challenges while working in the veterinary profession, as well as an exciting program called NAMVI, or Not One More Vet, that was started to address mental health issues and stressors in the field of veterinary medicine as a way to help people address their own concerns, receive support when needed, and as a prevention in order to keep people in this very important field. Today, we also discussed the need for ongoing self-care, not just waiting until the weekends, but to take regular breaks from work to unwind while also allowing yourself to focus on other aspects of your life besides work. Having support is important, as well as focusing on what is going well. Yes, we have all heard about the importance of gratitude, but when practiced regularly, it does have the power to make changes over time. If you would like more information about NAMVI, please find their contact information in the show notes. You can also visit my website, OurAnimalConnection.com, for other podcasts on this topic and resources on compassion fatigue. Again, I want to thank Dr. Journey for the work she's doing in the field. I also want to send thanks to Dr. Elizabeth Strand from the Veterinary Social Work Program at the University of Tennessee, who has been such a pioneer in the field and who continues to promote well-being and education on this very important subject. Thanks to all of the veterinary professionals who work tirelessly to take care of our animals. Please take a moment to also thank the veterinary staff, all the way from receptionists, vet techs, and veterinarians, so they know their hard work is appreciated. Take care, everyone, and stay tuned for another episode of the Animal Academy podcast. Thanks for taking the time to listen to this episode of the Animal Academy podcast. Detailed contact information and links for each of the guests and resources provided inside this episode can be found at my website, animalacademypodcast.com. I'm Allison White, licensed clinical social worker specializing in the human-animal connection. Let's share and learn from the animals in the next episode of the Animal Academy Podcast.